head into the theater and the usher nods me in. They know me here. I descend down the staircase behind the movie screen that only select people know about. The door at the bottom opens and I walk in. The sound of movie spoilers fill the air. The barkeep has my drink ready and motions me to the back. The rest of the crew are here already. This is my type of place and these are my type of people. Join me as we discuss the inner secrets of cinema. Have a seat in the spoiler room.
And welcome to another Godzilla episode in the spoiler room. Yes, Godzilla month of March was so big, it's scooched its way into April. But we are wrapping up our Godzilla month with the latest Godzilla film that came out, not including the anime. And I've got a great crew here to talk with me tonight about Shin Godzilla or Godzilla Resurgence. It's also known as, and tonight, first in the room, we have the BFD himself, Mr. Glenn Bittner. Hello, Glenn.
Hello, Mark.
How are you doing tonight?
I am doing all right.
All right, all right, all right. And next to the BFD, he's back in the spoiler room with us. We have David from Inside Movies Galore. Hello, David. How are you?
I'm doing okay.
Glad to have you in here to talk about this unusual Godzilla film. And that's putting it lightly, actually. Folks, basically the plot summary for this is Japan is plunged into chaos upon the appearance of a giant monster. Yes, that is the plot. That is pretty much basically it. I remember people talking about this and like, oh, Godzilla's coming back again. And we're like, really? And finally getting to see it. When I saw it, I was like, wow, this is the most... This is the most unusual Godzilla film I've seen in quite some time, and there's been some real interesting ones, and this one is kind of out there. Glenn, how'd you feel when you first saw Shin Godzilla?
It is bizarre. In a lot of ways, but it's also very Godzilla, harkening back to like what Godzilla was when it first came out, where it's a lot of social commentary and political commentary going on with it.
Oh, yeah, there's a whole lot of political commentary because it's pretty much told from the perspective of the bureaucrats.
Yeah.
Which is a bit unusual for, you know, what we had seen in recent Godzilla films. How about you, Dave, when you saw this Shin Godzilla for the first time?
I didn't go and see it in the theater. I waited for it to come out on some DVD, Blu-ray platform. So I as well thought it was very weird, but intentionally so. And it doesn't have much of a plot line, really, except for the fact that, okay, there's a monster terrorizing Tokyo again.
It is pretty straightforward, kind of like the original, because this, yes, folks, I didn't really plan it this way. I was just choosing films that just kind of had Godzilla in the title just by itself. And not only have these Godzilla films we talked about, ones that have been released in the U.S., including Shin Godzilla, many of them have been their attempts at rebooting the franchise again. And yes, this is the third reboot of Godzilla. They've ignored pretty much all the history of the original. There's no reference at all to previous Godzilla. And in fact, the name Godzilla gets a different origin in this film. It opens with, it doesn't take long. It opens with this weird kind of earthquake happening where there looks like there's red water, like blood, and it's pouring into a tunnel. And we're being told from the group of the prime minister and his bureaucrats this story. So we get a lot of this opening first chunk, leaving a bit of mystery to what the monster is going to look like. and getting footage from various formats and various types, like many modern films. David, how did you feel about it when this opened? How this film opened with this?
It starts with this earthquake. So you got these guys going in on a boat. That has evidently been, you know, upset by the earthquake, you know, and there's no one around. And of course, you're in Japan, so people take their shoes off. So you see a pair of shoes, sitting on the ground, and all of a sudden, boom, the boat gets hit, and you see some kind of tentacle looking kind of thing. And next thing you know, the war people are telling, yeah, it's a tail. So,
well, yeah, because the tail shot up. I mean, yeah, it opens with a boat and water in true Godzilla fashion.
So, I mean, the thing is, it's different if you watch it in its subtitled form versus its dubbed form, because they have some, for the dubbed version, they have some really bad voice acting in there. And I was kind of hoping that they would have actually put it how it originally, how they were used to put them on the VHS, where the lips were moving and the because then you would have the natural effect.
Yeah. I don't mind subtitles at all. I watch the subtitle version, but yeah, it is an unusual reveal of this creature. I mean, we do get the boat. As I said, we get our traditional Godzilla opening elements of boat, water, abandoned mysterious boat, and suddenly we have this strange thing in the water showing up, but we just get this really long tail. Glenn, how'd you think this film opened compared to the other Godzilla films we've watched?
I have a real issue with the tail. I think the tail looks so hokey,
yeah,
throughout the entire movie, and it really bothered me all of the film. Every time I saw it, I'm like, oh yeah, that. It's like you try to do Spawn's cape as a tail. Good job, guys. You failed.
It's so freaking long.
Yeah.
Like I said, tentacle.
But, I mean, and so we get
Godzilla
this.
Godzilla is not hentai.
What?
Godzilla's not hentai. Stop it.
Yeah. We don't want to see what he wants to do with the tail.
This is how I describe that whole entire scene up until after he is a sort of metamorphed. I would say that they had used used a prop from another film that they probably had used back in the last Godzilla set, and then they had a Chinese dragon float that they were trying to fit into a CGI harness, and that was pretty much the Godzilla as we saw it.
And in this opening act, we do get some of the humor and the satire worked in, which makes me wonder just how much of this film was actually intended to be
serious,
because right away in the beginning with the tentacles up there, they decide to, let's assemble the scholars and scientists. And they only managed to scrape up three guys. And, you know, and they've got the bureaucracy in there as well. I mean, Glenn, you've watched many a Godzilla film. I don't think many of them have been told directly. I mean, like where we only follow the bureaucrats pretty much all the way through the film, have we?
No, but I think that's what makes this film a little bit more unique, in that I think it's actually more, probably one of the most realistic responses to something like this, to like a Godzilla, you know, if Godzilla were to really happen, I mean, that's who would be doing everything, would be all the bureaucrats.
Yeah, and it did feel realistic. It felt like they were trying to make kind of a realistic Godzilla film. And how about you, David? How did you feel about this story being told pretty much all from the bureaucrats, which is something we really haven't seen with Godzilla before?
Well, you gotta hand it to them. They've got a really strict government to say the first thing. So I think that in order to tell it the real way, they had to do it how, you know, how their bureaucrats would, even though it's kind of, you know, somewhat boring process. Because you just see a bunch of guys in a war room scrambling over themselves, trying to figure out and identify this monster, or what he is. And then, you know, it's kind of, you know, everything from a scientific point of view.
Yeah, scientific and government. I mean, we get Yaguchi, who I guess is the main person we kind of follow through this as far as the main character goes, because Godzilla is really just the monster in this one. He's not as much of a character as he has been in some of the previous ones. So we got Yaguchi, who is a young politician who works with the PM. And throughout this film, he kind of moves into position because they're vacated either by death or by information that they pick. And the other lead we have is a agent for the CIA, who is also a Japanese. She's Japanese female. And there's an interesting thing they do with this, these two characters that I thought that was a little bit, we've seen more prominent in other Godzilla films. And in this one, they really kept it so it wasn't, I never got the full romantic vibe from this. Did you, Glenn, at all, from these two characters?
No. I mean, there's that little bit there, just, but I think it was more her just playing with him than anything else. I don't think there's any actual, like, real romantic attraction there.
Yeah, and I just thought it was interesting because I'm like, okay, here we go, because we've got Godzilla films in the past where we got the guy and the girl, and there's kind of, you know, they're the younger ones, they have this kind of romantic thing, but
yes, love interest.
The love interest, yeah. But we didn't have that in here, did we, David? And how'd you feel about that? Did you like what they did with these two characters?
Well, I believe that the whole focus was more upon what the drama that was happening inside the, you know, the government facilities with the scientists and the monster. So I think even though there wasn't much of a storyline except for, you know, a terrorization of a monster, the destruction in its wake, and, you know, you had terror shown from people. So it's kind of like, okay, well, this is our solution to it towards the end, and poof.
Yeah, because Yaguchi, who they didn't believe at first, who said, I think it's a monster. And they're like, nah, it's not a monster. And then we get that something surface, the second form, I guess, of the creature coming over shore. And then they're like, oh, yeah, I guess you're right. Okay, give him a team and let's figure out what this monster is. And Godzilla goes through a number of forms in this, and I want to talk about these because they're, oh man, David, what'd you think of this second form when it comes on land?
Well, it looked kind of like his neck was a bunch of chopped gills that was spilling like Hawaiian punch out as it was, you know, kind of just wiggling. Wiggling. I'll say wiggling because that's pretty much what it was. It was like inchworming along, and you could see that there were buildings, you know, falling around him and whatnot. So, I look back at the title and I'm like, well, maybe they should have called the Shinless Godzilla. Well, at least at first.
At least at first. Well, he did have a couple of big legs, but he's kind of like a chicken. But apparently the gills in that were influenced by, I think it's a frill gilled shark or a gilled shark. I forgot the name of it exactly, but based off of a shark design, you can tell the way they designed it. But man, when this thing surfaced, it was not what I was expecting for a Godzilla film at all. How about you, Glenn, when we first get to see this land version of Godzilla, the second form of, you know, the chicken walker, basically?
Yeah, I mean, the initial thing I'm thinking is that when I first saw this, I'm thinking, is that what Godzilla's going to fight? Is this, like, going to be a Godzilla's the hero thing? And, you know, there's this weird lizardy, like, snake thing that invades Tokyo, and Godzilla's going to show up and beat him up? Because that did not look at all... I never thought, like, oh, yeah, that's Godzilla. I'm like, what is... What?
It's what he's... what he looks like after he is broken from his cocoon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this whole movie, I mean, Godzilla is... His big power is that he is... basically, evolution is his power.
Mm-hmm.
Because he can instantly, almost instantly, you know, he disappears for a short time and then comes back and has evolved to whatever crisis he has run into, which is usually, you know, whatever the Japanese have thrown at him. And he has come back in some other form that is stronger and able to resist than what they throw at him.
And let's not forget, he is still radioactive.
Oh, yeah.
He is highly radioactive in this. And yeah, his second form, which I call the chicken walker form, plows just like a straight line through a good chunk of Japan. And then he goes back into the water, disappears for a little while, as Godzilla seems to do a lot of times. And they're still trying to figure out what he is, and they can't get any straight answers. So a female scientist shows up and she comes up with all the answers pretty much. There's a mysterious scientist who's been studying this and gave warnings ahead of time. And, you know, so a lot of this, it was like, I felt like I was missing out a little bit on the commentary they were going for, because it felt like they were kind of, part of this was them making a statement about the Japanese government, out with the old and in with the new, almost. David, did you get that impression? At least one of the underlying messages in here, because
I got that, especially with how many deaths were happening above Avarian, you know?
Yeah, above Yaguchi, a lot of them were dying. And I mean, one of them get wiped out in a helicopter later in the film. And he pretty much moves up to not exactly prime minister, but close, you know. And then you've got the younger CIA person, too, who aspires to become the next president of the United States. But I felt there was a lot of message about how their country, you know, the next generation needs to lead them. So I wasn't off on that. I mean, that's the impression you got as well. Go ahead, Glenn.
I was going to say, that I think that's partly, I think it's also partly of the, it's Japan learning to stand on its own two feet.
Mm-hmm.
Because for a long, long time after the war, and even still to a degree, they are kind of reliant on the U.S. for a lot of stuff still. Right. They were for a long, long time, especially when it came to, you know, defense and all that type of stuff. They weren't, I mean, part of it because they weren't allowed to, you know, for a long time to have an army and a navy and all that stuff. And the U.S. took care of all that, and they were very reliant on the U.S. for a lot of stuff. And I think this is kind of, as you know, not just an out with the old, in with the new, but a almost like a coming of age for the Japanese, where they are now coming into their own as a nation once again after so long, you know, being down so long since World War II.
Yeah, and that's what I got as well, because their image of America still hasn't changed much.
No.
We're still the warmongers. And yeah, because at one point, Yaguchi and his team of scientists, misfits, nerds, heretics, I forgot all the descriptions they gave for all the people in his group, come up with this plan. As Godzilla evolves into his third form, they realize, oh, he's nuclear, and they've got samples that the scientists came together to study, and they realize we could use coagulant on Godzilla to basically drop his reactor in his heart to, like, below zero, like, you know, absolute freezing, and that's how we can get rid of him, rather than what America ends up coming up with, going, yeah, we talked to the UN, and if you guys can't get him under control, we're going to nuke him.
Yeah.
Right? Because that went so well last time, right?
Well, oh. it end the war.
Yeah.
So in their mind, it's the that's the final solution is boop, done. We're gonna boop you on the nose with 20 megatons.
And then we're going to leave tons of our troops in our way.
And I think that goes along with what you're saying, Glenn, about them standing on their own 2 feet, because the Yaguchi and the team scramble to enact their plan before the U.S. nukes Tokyo.
Yeah. Because
after Godzilla takes his third form, which is the big-eyed form, he evolves into pretty much the Godzilla that we see, the final form of him, and he's reached Tokyo, but he expelled all of his radiation, so he kind of froze, and that's when they have a two-week time period to enact their plan before the U.S. drops a bomb on him, basically is how it resulted. And there they scrambled to show that they could defeat Godzilla in a different method on their own terms and not in the same method that the U.S. would use for. And so I think that really fits in with what you were saying, Glenn, about them kind of giving the message of them being able to not rely on anyone but themselves to take care of the issue. And that final form of Godzilla, oh, man. Glenn, how'd you feel about this Godzilla in general, but especially the final form and what he can do?
Oh my gosh, the shooting lasers out of everywhere, pretty much. I mean, he basically turns into a. At the end, yeah, when they're doing all the drones, he turns into a Gunstar basically from Last Starfighter. At the end there was just, you know, lasers flying everywhere out of his tail, out of his spines. He's breathing his fire, just going nuts. And I mean, when he laser breaths through buildings where it's just like for blocks, he just destroys everything. I mean, this final form is by far the most powerful as far as like his array of weaponry goes of any Godzilla I've seen.
He really feels like the most destructive, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah.
In every way or shape or form. Because not only that, Godzilla has evolved in now, instead of just shooting a laser beam from his mouth or shooting fire from his mouth in one direction, he actually expels flammable gas through the streets of Tokyo and then ignites it.
Yeah.
It was insane. He lit up the entire downtown streets with fire. So it's like, wow, that's doing it more efficiently, I guess. And this whole part with the cars and when he expels the gas through the streets of Tokyo and then lights it and you got the explosion. David, did you have a little bit of flashback to Independence Day on that?
A little bit, but I had a little bit more of a flashback back to GameCube because there was a GameCube game. I think there was a similar looking Godzilla that at least lit up on the back end like he did, which you were able to either acquire over time, and it kind of reminded me of that for a little bit. You know, even though I know they never really had one like that until now. So, but it's like seeing something. It was kind of beautiful how they portrayed his final form. In honesty, it was like seeing like the Aurora Borealis. You know,
he was actually really great looking. I mean, he's scary. He had jagged teeth. Uh-huh. Which, you know, they determined really wasn't good for eating. So, you know, they figure he lived on energy. And, yeah, this final form is the most destructive. But the way he does the destruction, we're going right back to the nuclear analogy, though this time, instead of him being created by nuclear bomb testing, he's created by pollution, which is a major problem in many areas in the Pacific area, especially in some of the Asian countries. So, Glenn, do you think once again we're using Godzilla as the message for one of the main scares, if you will, or the main causes of problems for the environment for their country?
So, yeah, absolutely. That's been a key thing in almost every Godzilla movie. Even some of the ones where he's fighting other monsters, it's still, I mean, you have him versus the smog monster, you have him caused by radiation, you have him caused by toxic waste, by atomic bombs. So,
So here we have Godzilla was created by pollution, radioactive pollution, but nonetheless pollution, which is a major subject across the world. It just read the headlines recently about the island of garbage in the Pacific. That's a lot bigger than I thought it was. You know, so the Godzilla is kind of that. And also in a way, not only the pollution factor, but you almost get the impression they were kind of showing how the government might handle, say you had a terrorist, say, set off a dirty bomb in the city. David, did you get that feeling as well, that they kind of were alluding to something along that lines of a return of a nuclear threat to Japan?
Ability of one, I would say so, because they were once again using their government to portray exactly what they would have done in these steps that, you know, that they were, you know, going through as the monster, you know, changed to its true form. And I believe that, yeah, if they were possibly hinting at the possible terrorist attack in the form of more nuclearism.
Yeah, and that's the feeling I got with it was we're kind of circling back around to,
like, they're also kind of still scared of the threat of one from anywhere. I mean, we got Kim Jong-un in Korea playing games with, you know, Trump.
Yeah, so you got that going on, though this was made just before then, but still the environment, the air is there of potential going back to a nuclear scare, to a Cold War, as it were. And that's what I think is also being portrayed in this film, and I thought that was quite interesting to see that in a modern film again, because, well, I mean, you get the whole idea of the U.S. wants to nuke Japan to save the world, and you get that one line that the female character, the agent, I think it was, no, the scientist is what she said, the one female scientist, she said that man is far more frightening than Godzilla.
Yeah.
I mean, as much as there might be some satire in here, Glenn, this film has a few dark moments in it too, doesn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, and there's something, they touch on something that you almost never see in a movie like this, where at one, right at the end, where Agent Girl and Godzuki, what's his name?
Yaguchi.
and he says, well, there were a lot of casualties, though, too. And I'm like, they actually allude, you know, they actually mention that, because normally it's just like, hey, we won, great, everything's fine now. It's like, really? Millions died. I don't know if everything's fine. There's how many people displaced, how many people died, you know, and they actually kind of mention that, which is, I thought was, I'm like, awesome. They actually mentioned the fact that, yeah, I mean, we won, but there was a price we paid.
Well, yeah, because he also drops that line that some politicians won't own the casualties, but I'm not that guy. I'm going to own
it.
I'm going to own the fact that we had casualties in this, and because they were slow to react, and they didn't kind of react the way that they should have. They didn't put their trust in the scientific thing that they came up with at first. And yeah, you're right. They do play at the fact that there are casualties. Well, even though it's told from the perspective of the bureaucrats, we get to one scene. I think it was Godzilla. He was in his third form before he comes out in his final form, where he falls on a building, and you actually get a scene real quick of a family inside that building.
Yeah.
And they don't get out. And I'm like, holy shit. I'm like, here we got a goofy looking Godzilla. And all of a sudden we get this dark moment where you're just like, oh man, that kind of, you know, snap you back a little bit to reality really quick, going, wow, this guy's actually killing people, which is something, yeah, you don't really get in a lot of monster films or even modern big films. I'll throw out Pacific Rim for that matter.
Well, just like the Americanized Godzilla. I mean, you got him being more of a hero, you know. I mean, instead of a destroyer. You know what I'm saying?
But yet there was still a lot of collateral damage from him.
But you know, each film has its quirks.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it does. Each film has its quirks, but I agree. It's interesting to see this film actually, at least a little bit at the end, address the fact that, yeah, there was collateral damage, folk. Well, because that's kind of a message throughout this film a bit about collateral damage, because we had the prime minister who they send the helicopters to go after Godzilla, and they're just about to like just unload on him. But there's a dad and his kid walking across the railroad tracks where the attack's happening. So they call it off because of just two people, because he doesn't want collateral damage. And of course things get so serious that they eventually kind of toss that to the wind. But yeah, they still circle around and address it. And so it is cool to see that they take that into account now as well with this. And even with the final plan that they had for Godzilla to expel all of his radiation so he could slow down and they could get the coagulant in him, they used drones for most of the attack.
Yeah.
Because the tanks and helicopters didn't do much, but they decided to use drones because they had the U.S. help going, yeah, okay, we won't nuke you yet, and yeah, you can have some of our, you know, billion-dollar drones as fodder. But I thought that was interesting that they were using drones for the main attack as well. So I think that also adds to their idea of trying to reduce the amount of damage and deaths that occur from a normal Godzilla attack. So we get to the end of this film, though, and we have Godzilla, and they anticoagulate him to freeze him. But Dave, he's still there. He's still frozen. You think they're trying to leave it open for maybe a sequel?
I think it's possible that they might be leaving it open for a possible sequel, because you don't really get to see the monster implode you get to see him just kind of expire.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he's just laying there all whole, so it's more like a statue now, except he's laying on the ground.
Huge statue. He's a freaking huge statue with that long tail. Because he stood up one more time for one final barrage, and then he immediately freezes. And so you got this big Godzilla here. And Glenn, do you think they left it open on purpose like that so they didn't show him like crumble?
Well, it's left open based on the fact from what's on his tail.
Yes. Why didn't you tell our listeners a bit what's on his tail? Because I thought that was like the creepiest ending ever.
The final shot, the very final shot of the movie, shows Godzilla's tail, and on his tail there's like it looks like little, kind of like almost like more humanoid looking little mini Godzillas.
Yes,
but with almost kind of human characteristics, because it's the, it plays still on the, you know, how he evolves for every trouble, and the trouble he ends up, that ends up beating him for the most part, is the, you know, these tiny little people beat him. So his adaptation, I think, for the end is to beat these little tiny people. He's going to make a bunch of little, like, basically little tiny Godzillas.
But not like Jurassic Park style tiny Godzillas. He's making tiny Godzilla people.
Yeah.
Which really threw me for like a Geiger loop. I'm like, wow, that felt like a kind of a Geiger moment there with those half Godzilla people sticking out of its tail. Do you think, Glenn, that maybe some got off his tail before he died?
Possibly. I think if there's a sequel, we'll find out that was true.
You want it? Do you want to see little human Godzillas?
No, I don't. I do not.
Because they'll probably be scary little fuckers.
Yeah, but I just, you know, it. That's not what I want from a Godzilla movie.
Right. You want the big monster, which you had for most of this third act. That's what you want from.
Yeah. Yeah. If I didn't want a big monster in my Godzilla movie, I'd watch the 2014 American version of Godzilla.
Ooh.
Or Cloverfield.
Which we did cover on this episode. Check out our catalog. We did cover the 2014 Godzilla film. So you can listen to that and listen to some of our crew members' thoughts on that film. But David, how would you feel if the sequel to Shin Godzilla, instead of being large Godzilla attacking Tokyo, it's a whole bunch of Godzilla people?
It would be interesting, because then it would be like kind of like the alligator people, except more modernized.
And they could probably breathe fire, and I don't think the alligator people could breathe fire.
No.
I'm not sure how well this one was received. I know there was some big hype over it because this was the first return of Toho to Godzilla, because the studio itself, I think, had promised after, was it Final Wars or SOS, that they had taken a 10-year break from Godzilla. And this was the first one coming back from the 10-year break. And, It definitely is something different than what you've seen in the past from Godzilla. But at the same time, Glenn, did you get the feel like this still kind of got back to the roots of Godzilla? I know you alluded to it before. You mentioned it before. But would you say this Godzilla, though, was more like the 1954 Godzilla?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, there's more exposition going on, and there's more... What are the people doing, and how are the people reacting to it? So I think you do get that, which you don't always get in all the Godzilla films.
Yeah, you do get a lot of people reaction in this one. Quite a bit. People running, people with their camera phones, because it is the modern age, so everybody has their camera phone out taking pictures of Godzilla. And in fact, that's how the government ends up getting some of its information. Is from camera phones, which I thought was funny. At one point they go, "Oh, we've been scouring the social media for any information."
Yeah.
We saw Godzilla on YouTube.
Pretty much. Well, if you think about it nowadays, I mean, it is fitting. And I like to see horror films, because this one, I think, is played, even though it's got some satire in it, is played kind of more like a horror monster film of sorts, you know, because there's some pretty scary moments in here, or meant to be. But I always like when those types of films, when they use it to but they modernize it, but you know rather than trying to go all retro, because I'm really exhausted by the horror genre, especially trying to get back to the 80s. I mean, this truly felt like a modern Godzilla film, or a modern monster film, How'd you feel about it, Dave? Would you say this really felt like a more modern monster film and that they were trying not to be retro?
I think so, because, you know, you see obviously the Godzilla in his final form, that he's got like these, you know, cool crystal like, you know, things on the back of him. So that is a little bit more of an advancement. But the feel and the look of him, you know, once he's in his final state, kind of makes me think of how he originally looked in the 1950s film. You know, it's so to me, I think they were definitely trying to modernize the original story, but also, as we said, portray some kind of political message.
Oh yeah, well, Godzilla's always been political, especially the standalone Godzilla films. That much is, you know, stands right out with these movies, which I think some people at surface just take them as just straight monster films, and some of them are. I mean, some of them. Let's face it, the most produced DVD ever, Godzilla versus Megalon. I mean, I'm not sure there's a lot of political message there, but Glenn, it does have a history, and we've seen it in all these films we've covered, that at least the standalone Godzilla films seem to really be meant for political messages and such for the public, which you don't always get from monster films, do you?
Not always, but you do quite often, more often than most people think.
Mm-hmm. You think it's more, it's just masked sometimes because people are all focused on, say, the giant tarantula?
Well, it's masked, or it's just not written well enough for people to really get that, you know, it's way too subtle, or it's just, you know, everyone's so focused on the horrible, 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 horrible effects in some of those older monster movies.
Well, you were with us on the Godzilla 2000 film. Would you say at least the special effects have improved since then?
Oh, yeah.
What'd you think of the way Godzilla was shot and the special effects within this film versus, say, especially Godzilla 2000 and Godzilla 1998?
No, the effects are quite good for the most part. I mean, because I mean, and they go really over the top with, I mean, there's obviously a fair amount of CG in this with you know, all the 78 points of light that shoot out of his ass and his and everything. So, but no, I think for effects wise, it's done quite well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they shoot this a lot better too than some of the previous films, and I like the look. I like especially like a few of the shots they had of Godzilla. I think there's one where a car is driving by Godzilla and you're looking up from it from like someone's camera phone, which looked really awesome and gave you the idea of just how big this Godzilla is.
Yeah,
Dave, how about you with the special effects in this and how Godzilla was shot?
Well, the thing you have to remember about many of the Godzilla films in the past is they were not really shooting many of them on any kind of a budget.
Mm-hmm.
At least when maybe when they first started out, they had kind of a Universal Studios kind of look, but then as they advanced forwards, you could see how much of a budget they were working from. as you saw each film, especially some of the Gamera films, you know, or Varan the Unbelievable or things of that nature. So it's, I mean,
they had some money put behind this, but I think
that this is Toho. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say that they definitely have advanced. I mean, it still looks somewhat cheesy in the beginning, so it started out more of like a sci-fi, you know, film. But I think the metamorphosis of the monster eventually became what they wanted it to become as they transformed it. And I think I think part of it was it transformed into what it is because they were trying to figure out the look as they were going.
They could be trying to kind of deciding how they're going to design it as they went along. But I think the idea of Godzilla continually changing his form is rather frightening. Though I do agree that I wouldn't necessarily want to watch a Godzilla film that's nothing but a little human Godzilla shooting fire, you know, around the city. I want my big lizard, if you're going to call it Godzilla. Which, again, it got its name from the code word that America gave it.
I don't know. Imagine how thrilling a movie would be with a bunch of little mini Godzillas going, "We're ready to fire. We're ready to fire. They're ready to fire. Then we should fire. Then you should fire." Then, that's what part of this movie was, which played in the whole bureaucracy thing, is that, you know, they can't just open fire on something. They've got to go through, you know, seven people to get that permission to fire, as opposed to the, you know, like when those helicopter guys first pull up, "Wait, this doesn't look like the way the target was described." "Oh, you're right. There's probably two giant monsters that are rampaging through your city. You just realized there wasn't one before." "Really? What does it look like with the picture? This isn't a Tinder date."
Yeah, that kind of caught me off guard too, as they fly around. Target doesn't look like it, you know, like it was described. And so they don't fire upon it. You have a big freaking lizard in the middle of your city destroying buildings. "Nope, we can't fire on it. We have to wait for permission from the PM to fire on it." Like, yeah, that definitely was making the statement on how the military or just about anything can't be done without the bureaucracy involved in the red tape, even as something as direct and pretty much straightforward as shoot the big lizard in the middle of town.
Yeah.
I mean, they were worried about collateral damage, and we mentioned it earlier. There was a guy, you know, and his daughter, and trust me, you don't want him killed, but there is a chance they might make it to somewhere safe by the time you start shooting missiles at Godzilla. But they couldn't pull the trigger, and yeah, it was like seven people for permission, you know, which was interesting too, because you get that parallel, you get that, yet you then get the scientists who are working on getting the coagulant stuff going, and there's very little bureaucracy. They got plants producing, and some other plants are going, "Oh, hey, yeah, by the way, if you buy these three trucks, they're yours and you can use them." And it's like,
yeah.
The scientific community was moving faster than the government. And I thought that was an interesting statement. Do you think that was kind of what they were going for with that, Glenn?
I don't know if that was intentional. I think it was at the point where they're like, "Wow, we need to wrap this movie up."
Yeah, we're near the end of our budget. We got to wrap it up. Okay.
Well, we can only show so many times that, you know, all of our conventional weapons are completely ineffective against Godzilla before that really becomes tiresome. Like, "Oh, machine guns don't work. Let's try autocannons." "Nope. How about little missiles?" "No." "All right, tanks." "No." "All right, let's try missiles again." "Really? Can we just..."
Artillery. Hey, Godzilla's just standing there, and it's like, you know, after the first four times, you would have thought, maybe we need a different approach. Though it did look pretty good of all the explosions around Godzilla, and he just keeps walking.
I gotta say, whoever the Japanese military has their training, their aim is dead on. Because, like, all those shots just hitting, all the tanks hitting Godzilla right in the knees, and all of the other shots hitting him right in the head. Like, they're not, nothing's missing, nothing's landing anywhere else. It's all, like, direct hits on Godzilla. So, I mean, they're just phenomenal shots of how good their aim is.
It was Godzilla, so it didn't really have any effect. Though you do get the one guy going, "I think the target's slowing down." It's
like, he's almost slowing down so he can kill you.
He's that slowly down. He just can't see through the bank of fog of smoke from all the missiles you unloaded on his head.
Fuck, Godzilla!
So Shin Godzilla, we'll wrap it up here tonight because, yeah, this film, of some of the other Godzilla films, not quite as deep, pretty straightforward, but an interesting approach in trying to bring something new to the franchise. And also, you know, showing more collateral damage. We even get, even though they may have defeated Godzilla, we get the fact there's radiation fallout in a huge chunk of Tokyo, which they start talking about getting iodine pills in that, which is like, oh, grapes. This is going to be around for a while. So it is an unusual Godzilla film. Doesn't make it a bad film, but it's definitely one where if you're expecting just to see the big guy right away, you may be taken aback by it. So I think we'll wrap it up tonight. We'll wrap up our Godzilla month, and we'll go down the line here and just get your final thought with Shin Godzilla. Would you recommend it to a Godzilla fan? And also, what do you think of Godzilla as a whole, as far as a movie franchise that has gone 31 films? Do you think there's still more Godzilla to be shown? David, why don't we go with you first?
Well, since it's lasted, to me, Godzilla has always been the monster that was created from the fear after Hiroshima. And it happened. You know, there was we scared the shit out of them. So they created this monster from the abyss of that fear. So to me, that was the relying Godzilla myth, and he's carried relatively well over the years, even though, you know, budget stank. I mean, you could definitely tell the Christmas lights exactly where they were, but at times. But in reality, I think that Godzilla survives because there are definitely many film fans of Godzilla out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I do believe that there might be one or two more films down the road, especially since we got that King Kong versus Godzilla down the road.
Well, I meant those. I meant more so the ones direct from Toho. We do have the American monster universe of Godzilla that we're seeing more coming. We've got the next.
As far as Toho,
mm-hmm.
I'm not sure necessarily of Godzilla, but they could definitely, I think, bring back Gamera if they wanted to.
I think there's been actually talks of them coming out with another Gamera film, though. I haven't looked too deeply into it, but yeah, I could see Gamera. We could use a Gamera one. I wouldn't mind seeing that on a big screen. Gamera! And Glenn, how about you? Would you recommend Shin Godzilla to Godzilla fans to watch? And on the whole, do you think, as far as for Toho-produced Godzilla films, do you think there's more to come?
I would say yes to both.
Mm-hmm.
Do I think they should make more Godzilla movies? I know. I really don't know if they should, but I think they will because, you know, it's going to make money for them.
Sure.
I mean, Godzilla is still a big, you know, it's still a big property. It's still got some legs behind it or under it, whatever you want to say. So, they're going to keep doing stuff. I mean, I think that's just a given. They're mm-hmm. going to keep doing some stuff. So, but I mean, in a lot of ways, I think, yeah, this is kind of, I think it's kind of run its course.
Mm-hmm.
There's only so much you can do with it. And there's only, until we have with all of our space travel, we have so much cosmic radiation that we're bringing back from, you know, Mars, but then you can have a Godzilla where he's, you know, the result of Mars radiation that they bring back from space.
Well, they do have the anime Godzilla out as well.
Yes,
they Netflix. Do. I haven't watched that yet. Have you seen that one yet?
I have not yet. I've heard mixed things, but I'm not going to let that stop me. I'll watch it eventually. I just you know.
Yeah, I'm curious.
I'm not like you, Mark, where I can watch 738 movies a week, which I don't know how you do it, having a wife and two kids, because I still see you do stuff with them. And so I think you're a cyborg who doesn't sleep.
I just feed them directly into my brain when I go to sleep at night is what I do.
Okay.
I kind of like, you know, low-jacked them to my brain.
How do you do that? I need to learn how to do that.
It hurts. And the port where I got to plug things in itches a lot. But hey.
I'm in my upper 40s. Everything hurts already. So if I can get a movie out of it.
That's true. This is very true.
The bicentennial man of film.
There you go. More like maybe more of Johnny Mnemonic.
Oh, yeah.
But yes, Shin Godzilla, I'd recommend it as well to Godzilla fans, though don't go in expecting to see the big guy like you had in the past, at least for most of the film, which again took me aback first time I saw it. So second time around, I knew what was coming. And in the beginning, it is a little goofy looking in that, but there's still that subtext that's in this film quite a bit that we've seen in the other Godzilla films. And this has been fun doing the Godzilla month, watching them over the years and seeing what has changed and pretty much what has stayed the same in these films. And yet it's run its course of 31 films with more, at least in the American monster universe, coming. And I wouldn't mind seeing another one from Toho, a Japanese produced, another Godzilla film, and see where they go next with it, because it looks like all bets are off. And they're going to do just about anything with this Godzilla to try to keep him fresh. And so I'd be curious to see where they go with it next. And I just have to give a shout out to a longtime supporter of our channel. Killer Rodan is his username and his channel. And you should check out the comments he's put on the last couple of our Godzilla films. He gave some great insight on Godzilla 2000. He left a number of comments in paragraph format that you should check out, because he really had the details, and he is a big monster expert. I love his videos, and it was awesome.
I don't know if I believe you. I mean, the name Killer Rodan doesn't sound like someone who knows anything about monster movies,
right?
Or is a fan at all.
But I got to give a shout out to him, because he dropped some major info about Godzilla 2000, and I really appreciate that, him adding that to the commentary of the recording of the spoiler room last week. So check out his channel. He does movie reviews as well, but he really gives an interesting perspective and knows a lot about monster films, which is awesome. So, and I'm sure he may even, if he listens to this, have some things to say about this that we may have gotten right or wrong, but hey, you know, films are a bit of perspective, and I love watching films from other countries, because seeing the direction and the way subjects are handled is refreshing to see it done differently than it is here. Although people are clamoring for a Godzilla versus Pacific Rim, but I don't know if we'll ever see that. I don't know if we want to see that.
That's like if Godzilla went up against the Transformers.
Now, see, that I'd watch, because I just wanted to see annihilate all the Transformers and accidentally, oops, there went, oh, where'd Michael Bay go? I don't know. just saying, you know, Godzilla.
No, because if you had him with Transformers, Michael Bay would be involved, and then we'd have giant nutsack on Godzilla.
Oh, God, yeah. We don't need a Godzilla nutsack. We really don't need to see that. and on that note about
with
Godzilla's
the camera nutsack, flares.
And on that note of Godzilla's nutsack, I think we'll wrap it up tonight. And this is the point where you can find out where you can find these fantastic folks when they aren't here. Glenn, why don't you tell the fine folks where they can find you at when you're not here?
Find me on Facebook with the BW Bunker, Guy in a Bunker Productions. Also find me on my gaming podcast, which is at gncast.com. It is Adventure Party. You can also check me out on guyinabunker.com, mr.com, nakedhobo.com, which is my old site, which has all of my older movie reviews on it, or just follow me on Twitter at guyinabunker.
Awesome. And David, where can they find you at, sir?
You can find me out on Facebook under Inside Movies Galore or Movies Galore Milwaukee. And you can find me out on Twitter if you so want to. But lately, I've been on the Inside Movies Galore channel. So definitely check us out there. So.
Fantastic. Well, I thank you, gentlemen, for joining me on this journey through this unusual Godzilla film. I know it's not quite the most popular one among some people, but I appreciate you guys sitting down and talking about it. I hope you enjoyed this conversation of our ramblings about this film. And we thank you so much. Make sure you check out the iTunes and Stitcher Radio, as well as all the other options at Special Mark Productions for this and other programs we do here. So we appreciate everyone out there. Now, let's say good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
What's your